We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now, guys, as usual, this episode is brought to you not only by you, the fine people of the Patreon, who do very much make this all possible, but we need some help. We cannot do it alone. I cannot expect you to shoulder this entire podcast like Atlas. So we've got to get some of our biggest sponsors out today. Today we are brought to you by International Youth Day. Young people, this day is for you. You finally have something that is all yours, something that belongs to you, because let's be honest, you have so few things. No homes, no savings, no stable jobs, and increasingly, no future that isn't just basically hiding in a bunker from climate change or forming a marauder gang in a desert apocalypse caused by climate change. But at least in the marauding gang, you have something. You have the power of scary friendship. But a gang of scary friends is better than celebrating International Youth Day in the climate apocalypse by taking your turn as the daily blood bag for the former billionaire who runs the underground bunker that you now live in. Because International Youth Day isn't about celebrating the youth anymore. No, no, in this post-climate apocalypse world, International Youth Day is about sustaining the youth of your great patron saint, Peter Thiel. And our other great sponsor, International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. A day to celebrate the world's Indigenous people because we certainly aren't doing it any other time. So why not condense it all into one single day? And when we finish blowing up all of their culture and digging up the minerals underneath it and burning the jungles and the forests of the world, driving them to extinction, at least we will still have International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples to remember them by. On the plus side, we will still be able to buy merchandise while we talk about how we wish we could have done something sooner, something stronger, something better to help the world's Indigenous people. I'm particularly fond of fridge magnets and mugs myself, so if we could whip a couple of those up, that'd be great. I'll do my part. And of course, we couldn't do any of this. Any of this would not be possible without my own live shows, of course, my own live shows. I am doubling up this year. I'm coming to the Melbourne Fringe with my two storytelling shows. One, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, a live storytelling show that involves four true stories, a monkey bite, a long bus trip across America, an arrest and a mugging. So if that sounds like your kind of thing, you should definitely come and check it out. But if you enjoy the content of this podcast and you want to see more like it in a live setting of some kind, then you should come out and check out Wage Against the Machine. I'm bringing it to the Melbourne Fringe for the very first time. And that is the true stories of my old dodgy jobs, my $20,000 robo debt, and the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. Those shows will be running from the 4th till the 20th of October, but tickets are on sale now, so feel free to snap them up. They are pay-what-you-can tickets for both shows, so anything you feel like you can give will definitely help it out. But until then, guys, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Speaking of news, let's get into it. Let's start with the headlines. Australia's official terror alert level has been raised from possible to probable amid heightened community tensions. Now don't get too concerned, guys, they are just talking about necessary precautions due to the possibility that Peter Dutton might become PM in the next election, so you really gotta raise up the concern level there. A Chinese vessel has been caught stealing scrap metal from a World War II British shipwreck. When asked about the incident, Chinese officials were heard saying, "How do you like it when we steal your ancient artifacts, Britain? Yeah, it's not so fun when it's someone doing it to you, is it, huh? Huh?" Even more impressive, I heard that they had pieces of Stonehenge which they were taking to the National Chinese Museum because, quote, after Brexit, we couldn't be sure the locals would be trusted to look after it. NASA has selected Elon Musk's SpaceX company to destroy the International Space Station at the end of its life. NASA knew that he was the right man for the job after seeing what a great job he did destroying Twitter. French cyclist Julien Bernard has apologized after being fined for kissing his wife during a Tour de France time trial. The governing body said that the fine was for unseemly or inappropriate behavior during the race and damage to the image of the sport. Yeah, see, turns out he got in real trouble because he wasn't French kissing. For Mental Health Awareness Week in the UK, McDonald's rebranded its Happy Meals as just The Meal to encourage conversations about children's emotions. At least, that's what they're telling the press. In actual fact, they're doing it to prepare those children for their new future, a world with only a vague memory of happiness. Oh, you think that's dark? The Meal is much better than the original name that they come up with, which was the Sorry Kid, the Darkness Will Be Eternal From Now On Meal. Keir Starmer's Labour government unveiled plans for a rooftop revolution that will see millions more homes fitted with solar panels to bring down domestic energy bills, and approved three massive solar farms in the east of England in order to tackle the climate crisis. Do you hear that, federal government? Do you see what's happening here? England, a country so bereft of sunlight, humans had to mutate to have whiter skin, is investing in solar power at a national level. Before us, before Australia, the country so sunny that we had to add extra colours to our weather maps to account for all the extra heat. I'm just saying, when I, as a white guy, need sunscreen 6 months out of the year because of all the sunshine, it might be worth looking into this solar power thing. Greece has enacted a new employment law that lays out a mandatory 6-day work week. This style of work week is known as the Sisyphean work week, because that meaningless labor is the only happiness that you'll know from now on. I guess this time Zeus took the form of Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis because he seems determined to fuck as many of the Greek population as possible with this one. Milan's biggest airport, the second busiest in Italy, will be renamed after the country's late former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. Many Italians feel naming the airport after Berlusconi is an insult, and the name should be given to someone who has done a better job of protecting the reputation of the people, like Tony Soprano. As a man who was tried on charges ranging from tax evasion and bribery to corruption and having sex with underage sex workers, I can't think of a more fitting legacy for the former PM than an airport. Think about an airport, a place where people are overcharged for services that are underdelivered, a place that consistently fails the public, yet they go crawling back time and again when needless authority demonstrates its stranglehold of power over a hapless populace, a place that serves the rich first and leaves the poor with the shitty end of the stick. And more often than not, the actions of the airport result in someone having to take their pants off. What better legacy could a man deserve than this? Especially this man. Perhaps if they named a waste management plant after him, but until then, this airport will have to do. That's it for the headlines for today. Now onto the bigger news, starting with ethical investment news. Money! We all need it, but it's hard to obtain enough of it to survive off without bending a few rules from time to time, especially if you don't want to get trapped in the ceaseless toil and endless drudgery of doing things the good and moral way. Ugh, who could be bothered? Fuck that, right? Yuck, morals, gross, bleh. I need money, and I need it now, and I will take my lead from my heroes, the gold medal winners of capitalism, business owners. Because business owners will make money no matter what, even if they have to do a cheeky little lying or just a light dusting of untruthing. So with that in mind, Australian Super has been accused of greenwashing its ethical option portfolio by secretly investing in coal, gas, and oil. Because making money is hard, guys. It's hard, you understand? You know how many people's futures they need to secure? So many futures! And you're not helping by being so damn broke all the time. You understand? It's complicated out here for a super. Can you just help a brother out by making a little more money? Please, then I wouldn't have to make so many unethical investments in order to lift you up out of the dirt. How is this possible, you might ask? How could they justify taking my socially responsible dollars and then investing them in coal, gas, and oil? Well, it's thanks to a little loophole in its investment policies. I say a little loophole, but really, it's a hole big enough to bury the Titanic in. It's more of a loop chasm. You see, Australian Super's socially aware option does indeed exclude investments in shares and bonds issued by fossil fuel companies. Yes, it does. It's there. You can guarantee that, my friend. It does, however, have one small problem. Okay, itty bitty, teeny weeny problem. Turns out, it has no restrictions on other types of assets. Assets like property, like infrastructure projects, like direct loans to businesses. Now that doesn't sound so bad at first, right? I mean, after all, what's a little loan between businesses, right? What's a little loan between capitalists? We can get this done ethically and responsibly. Well, I would have thought so too. Seems under these agreements, the fund loans our money to companies in return for interest payments. Turns out, Australian Super's financial disclosures show that it has been lending members' funds, remember, our money, to fossil fuel companies around the world, including Indonesian coal miner Adano, Canadian oil and gas company Baytex, and US-based Magnolia Oil and Gas, without technically breaching its own policies or promises to members. Yes, that's right, we've entered the pedantry zone. When our grandchildren ask us why we did nothing to stop the ongoing investment in oil, gas, and coal projects in our lifetime, we can stand tall and tell them that we did everything we possibly could. We invested in the social and ethical choice from our super. We did everything that we possibly could except read the fine print, because it's really tedious. And I was tired. I was busy fighting for the planet, you know? I didn't have time to read the fine print. And if we really are leaning into the pedantry of it all, and at this point, why the fuck not, right? Everybody else is. This profile, let me just check, this profile is the socially aware profile, not the socially responsible profile. See the difference? Oh, they're aware. They're so aware. You have no idea how aware they are. They're aware of so many things. They're aware that they have lied to you. They're aware that this is a blatant violation of the nature of the promise made by the profile. And they're aware that you wouldn't like it. And that's why they hid it. Because they're aware. And they didn't want to upset you. They did all this for you, you ungrateful little shit. Now you don't have to eat poor quality cat food in the burning remains of civilization. You can afford to stock up on premium cat food and store it in a bunker that you had to invest most of your superannuation into in order to survive. You're welcome, by the way. You're so welcome. Oh, but wait, there's more. While an ABC investigation showed Australian Super has held more than $26 million worth of shares in companies involved in nuclear weapons. Ruh-roh. Well, that's not very socially responsible, but it is socially aware. Are we also investing in Wilhelm's Genocide Factory and Nazi Gold Emporium? The only good thing that you can say about investing in nuclear weapons is no country has been mad enough to use one in almost 80 years. But that's stretching the definition of good to its extreme limits. However, I won't stand by while people you people accuse them of not investing ethically. No way. No way. These might be hard to argue, but these are some of the most ethical investments that any company could possibly make. See, the whole purpose of the Socially Aware Fund is to invest in a socially aware and socially conscious manner. Now, while on the surface, it may not seem like oil, gas, coal, and nuclear weapons are very socially aware. But you're wrong! You're so wrong! So very wrong! Did you know that the number one cause of climate change is not, as popular opinion would have you believe, coal, gas, or oil? No! It's human beings. It's people! Yeah! Silent climate change is people! Silent climate change is people! Think about it. By investing in oil, coal, gas, and nuclear weapons, you are ensuring the human race will not survive for very much longer. Drastically improving the conditions of the planet. And isn't that what you wanted? A better planet overall? Well, that is until the apes learn to use fossil fuels derived from the remains of the humans, and then the whole cycle starts over again. But at least that one won't be on us, for the most part. Moving on now, it is global outage news. It kind of missed our collective attentions, especially those of us impacted during the middle of the workday, that there was something of a global outage recently. In a great example of why anti-monopoly laws exist and why, as a few random examples, 10 companies shouldn't control almost everything we eat, 7 companies shouldn't own the vast majority of popular beauty brands, or the clothing industry shouldn't be dominated by just 10 companies. Then there's the whole, like, Disney family of black holes forming a supermassive media black hole in the shape of Mickey ears out in space. And you scientists might be tempted to say, a Mickey ear-shaped black hole is impossible, but Disney doesn't play by anybody else's rules, but Disney's. Now, do you want to be amiable, or do you want to keep talking real science and get yourself cut? Look into Goofy's eyes and tell me that he hasn't ended a man before. Those are the dead black eyes of a creature who has seen too much and questioned too little of it. He doesn't have all of those hobbies for fun. He's in secret ops training. Goofy is an asset. Now, enter CrowdStrike, a little-known cybersecurity company that could trigger an IT meltdown that took down digital infrastructure on a global scale. Millions of computers across the world became unusable and unable to be rebooted, showing what's known in the industry as the blue screen of death, turning our planet from the little blue dot to the little blue dot of death. It got everywhere. Airports, supermarkets, this excellent image of Times Square, and this TikTok of the team at Triple J Hack unable to play their theme music due to the system malfunctions.
Hey there, it's Tweon Fitzpatrick with Triple J News. A raft of...
And this was just the beginning. Reports of airlines, payment processors, 911 call centers, TV networks, shopping centers, the Paris Olympics, banks and financial systems across the globe, among many others. And while this was undoubtedly a terrible situation for many involved, it was worth the inconvenience as grandparents and parents across the country were forced to go outside after Sky News went down as part of the outage. Yes, that's right. Sky News was taken out as part of the outage, briefly freeing Australia from the terror of Sky News, though not for very long. Certainly not long enough to undo some of the more long-term damage that they've suffered. CrowdStrike CEO George Kurtz posted on Twitter admitting to a deficit in the globalization of services increasingly filtered through less and less companies. Who could have guessed that homogeny in almost any system would have proven to be a risky strategy, reducing not only our ability to adapt in a rapidly changing world, but also our ability to work at maximum efficiency? Oh yeah, that's right. It's not all bad. This global outage turns out greedy multinational capitalism is in fact the most effective activist that we've had in years. One company goes down, and with it goes banks, airlines, major supermarkets, petrol stations, airports, casinos, and Sky News. Man, we haven't been this free of villains since January 25th, 1788. But the biggest proof is undoubtedly that CrowdStrike also struck down itself. CrowdStrike shares immediately dropped around 11% after the incident. Ugh! We haven't been this effective as an activist group for so long. Thank you, CrowdStrike. The true heroes. They saw a problem, they realized the solution, and they manifested the world that they wanted to see. They were so good that Anonymous are looking to recruit the CrowdStrike team member who pushed the update, trying to get him to work from within, assuming, of course, that he still has a job. Many solutions were floated for the BSOD fix. All of them, by the way, were put online, where a lot of people who needed them wouldn't be able to see them. The most interesting of them all was floated by Microsoft, who did not take the outage well, suggesting to solve this problem, users simply needed to turn their computers on and off again, not once, but 15 times in a row. Then they went on to blame the European Union for the world's biggest IT outage, claiming a 2009 agreement insisted on by the European Commission meant that Microsoft could not make security changes that would have blocked the update from CrowdStrike. To put it as simply as possible, the outage was triggered by a defective update for CrowdStrike's Falcon system, which was designed to prevent cyber attacks. It has privileged access to a key part of a computer known as the kernel, whereas Microsoft has Windows Defender, its in-house alternative to CrowdStrike. But the 2009 agreement allowed multiple security providers to install software at the kernel level to avoid a European competition investigation. Competition law promotes the preservation of competition within Europe by regulating anti-competitive conduct by companies to ensure that they do not create cartels and monopolies. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Nobody likes monopoly, except the person who owns Mayfair, and fuck that guy. So Microsoft is blaming the EU for not letting them create an uncontrolled monopoly, despite the obvious logical flaw presented by this situation. Having an uncontrolled monopoly on so many global systems, causing the largest IT outage in the history of computers, giving Gen X and Boomer coders PTSD as they remembered the dreaded days of the impending Y2K bug. Maybe there is a different lesson to learn. One not about pushing out so many updates, making things shift with the speed of an Australian NBN. Because, in an unexpected twist, American airline Southwest Airlines was saved from the outage as they were still running a Windows version from 1992. Now, while this would normally be a source of contention, a major airline running on a Windows system older than most of Gen Z, it's the kind of thing that John Oliver would do an entire half-hour episode about. In this one particular instance, it played in their favor. And only in this one particular instance. To nobody's surprise, the problem is clear, and they will take all the wrong lessons from this, and will never spend money to upgrade anything again. I think that's just gonna be their excuse. They'll be like, remember that time when we didn't suffer the global outage? Just saying. This is all the justification that they need to never spend another dollar upgrading a single piece of technology ever again. CrowdStrike president Michael Sentonas has come out and taken responsibility for the outage, saying there's a possibility of compensation being rolled out for lost income. But what everyone seems to be missing, and what may save them from paying any compensation, is that this is all simply a demonstration of how good CrowdStrike is at their job. Think about it. In a single moment, they had everyone offline and unhackable, as promised. Near global cyber security protection, Centonis went on to maintain, CrowdStrike's cybersecurity service is indeed the most secure in the world, saying, you can't be hacked if you aren't online. Moving on now, it's horny jail news. If there was one company who you expected to never be publicly discussing the internet's tendency to be... What's the correct phrasing here? A man in a desert desperate to quench his thirst. Do you follow? Excessively horny on main is what I'm trying to say, right? Which company would you have picked? Just, I'll give you a second here. Which company do you think you would have picked? Possibly Disney comes immediately to mind, right? But Disney knows that there is a direct correlation between dongs and dollars. But you know who hasn't learned that lesson? Nintendo. As the Nintendo president said, action must be taken against the inappropriate use of its characters that it says makes fans feel uncomfortable, showing a bigger disconnect from the fan base since not including Waluigi as a playable character in Super Smash Bros. The man's a janky prince! Why won't you let him smash? There's 89 characters, 2 different Samuses, a Ryu and a Ken? You don't need a Ken if you have a Ryu, you understand? Give us Waluigi. We demand Waluigi. What they clearly must be deliberately ignoring is that these images don't make the fans uncomfortable. Not at all. Fans are custom ordering these pictures. There's a whole section of the internet dedicated to it. How are you gonna make a statement about how this stuff needs to end and then pretend that it's not because there is a high demand for it? In a recent shareholder meeting, Nintendo president Shuntaro Furukawa was asked to address cases on social media where Nintendo IP and games are used inappropriately, which the shareholders said possess the risk of damaging the value of Nintendo IP. Now, if he was the president of, say, Illumination, he might have a point, right? Because those Minion memes, they are everywhere and they make a lot of us uncomfortable. What are you doing sharing conspiracy theories via Minions memes? These two mediums don't go together. But conspiracy theories never feature any Nintendo characters, do you understand? Mario keeps better company than those Minion cunts. Toad doesn't get caught up in bullshit like conspiracy theories. Toad operates secret raves, he deals Molly. Sure, there was that one time when he was embroiled in the Stormy Daniels Donald Trump debacle, but it's not because he chose to be there. Stormy evoked the name of the Mushroom Kingdom's chill short king, and he didn't deserve that. He does better than that. Until now, the company has stayed silent on many not-safe-for-work fan-made creations. Furukawa said, our company aims to achieve our management policy to bring smiles through entertainment. And I assure you, Mr. Furukawa, you most certainly are bringing smiles through entertainment by creating a whole cacophony of characters who light up the dark, lonely corners of the internet. You need to lean into the crazy, not away from it. The internet might bonk them and send them to horny jail, but you can't turn them away. Like it or not, these are your superfans. You don't get to choose your superfans. You just gotta ask My Little Pony, friendship is magic. Those bronies learn very quickly just how magical friendship really is. Hasbro knows not to look a gift brony in the mouth. Because it's not just friendship that's magic, my friends. But when it comes to merchandise sales, Rule 34 is also magic. And And finally, it's NDIS news. Welcome, dear listener, to the dark world of the NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, where people with disabilities are supposed to be provided with a few extra things to help them get by. You know, personal care, activities, transport, therapies, home and vehicle modification, mobility equipment, and help with employment. Pretty standard stuff, really. Well, Minister for the NDIS and Dad who claims to still be with it, Bill Shorten, is planning a few reforms for the old NDIS, looking to shake things up over at old support headquarters. He wants to make some cuts, starting with recipients' dignity and humanity, announcing on Sky News that he'd be looking to cut back on sex work access under the NDIS, or rather saying that sex work access would be banned altogether under the NDIS. Because apparently disabled people don't deserve to have ordinary things like sexual gratification and as close to an ordinary life as they can get. Not while you have a budget surplus to maintain, goddammit. Nothing is more important than a budget surplus. Not your regular, ordinary life. No, no, no. You can't win hearts of rural Australia by marching into election telling them that you spent government dollars making disabled people feel more human. It just doesn't play. But telling people that you made them feel less human? Now that is a vote winner. Let's get them pumped up for that fraud hunt. Go on, Bill, go off.
At the moment, we want to rule out the payment of strata fees, fines, steam rooms, gambling, legal cannabis, cruises, trips to Japan, non-assistance animals, taxidermy, weddings, gift cards, the Liberal favourite, sex toys, crystal therapy, cuddle therapy, clairvoyance and tarot. We want to ban somatic therapy, mastermind coaches, cryptocurrency. Quite frankly, the Leader of the Opposition says, who's the ugly? Why are you keeping these rorts on the scheme? It is all on the head of the Coalition. You couldn't run the NDIS. We're fixing it.
Now, for a man who spent over $600,000 on a speechwriter, I imagine this must be a huge problem, or else this might seem like a form of justifying your own overspending and correcting a little too much. And for it to be one of the things that Shorten would specifically highlight what must be a huge overspend, we must be talking millions. Surely he isn't just using something that would obviously make certain people angry as a kind of cudgel to lead the charge against spending on the needs of the differently abled and cover the kind of spending that government positions are notorious for, right? Right? Tell me something good, Bill.
Yes. Well, what's the late? Can you get them across the line before the winter break?
Well, we should be able to. You know, all the Liberals seem to think the NDIS is spent on is sex workers, which is a complete lie. I don't think there's been a claim approved in ages on it.
Shorten said, the reality is I've got one or two examples I'm aware of that it's ever happened. Ever. So it's not what's happening in most of the scheme. Oh, so it is a reactionary cudgel. I mean, that's a real shame, Shorten. That's a real shame. I've said some nice things about you in my time. So what are we actually worried about here? Because I remember a certain Bill Shorten saying...
The review panel heard that when the NDIS works, it changes lives.
And I suppose that you could argue making people's lives an eternal sexless slog through existence is definitely changing their lives. Well, one or two of their lives have ever been changed by it, if you know what I mean. Change, look, not all change is good. I'll just put it up, not all change is good. We're changing lives, yes. Does that mean that they'll be better? Not necessarily. This is a pretty disgusting beginning of a financial witch hunt, flagging for the ordinary people the terrors of taxpayers covering the cost of sex workers, when we all know it is only acceptable for taxpayer money to cover sex workers if the NDIS recipients were willing to travel to Parliament House and go to the prayer room. Then we might consider covering the cost of sex workers. That'd be the only place such activities would be acceptable. but we won't pay for the flight over. You've got to pay for that yourself. All this is despite the fact that NDIS Head of Fraud and Integrity, John Dardo, recently admitted that at least 5% of the scheme's $45 billion budget is spent erroneously. Which is not the flex that he thinks it is. 5% compared to how much the government fucks up spending your tax dollars, that's actually pretty damn good. Here's the thing. The general acceptable margin for error on anything usually falls between 4 and 8% in order to still have a 95% confidence level in that thing. So at 5%, we're actually 3% better off than it could be, and we're still rolling in spare cash here, come on! Enough, at least, to spend on a couple of sex workers, right? Especially given sex therapists and family planners are usually funded under Support Category 15, Improved Daily Living, which covers most kinds of therapeutic supports. As with all NDIS supports, you must be able to make a case that your need for the support is directly related to your disability, and it is reasonable and necessary for you to use your funds to receive either sex therapy or family planning. The NDIS can fund a sex worker for specific circumstances when the criteria for reasonable and necessary is met, and with approval directly from the NDIA or your local area coordinator. And a case is pretty easy to make. For those who enjoy sex, sex is very healthy and beneficial. Sex boosts mood and self-confidence, improves cognitive health, burns calories, boosts the immune system, lowers blood pressure, and helps prevent heart disease. And maybe, most importantly, reduces stress and anxiety, which is going to be an important thing when dealing with the Kafka-esque labyrinth that is NDIS funding and trying to acquire it for things that you might need, any things that you might need. It's bad enough dealing with Centrelink. Here is a very true thing that happened to me. I woke up one day and my payment had dropped. Now, I did some asking around and it turned out sometimes Centrelink randomly cuts off your rent assistance just as a little test. You know, just in case you aren't paying rent anymore. They needed to do a check apparently. And it's not like we're in the middle of a cost of living crisis and a housing crisis. No, that certainly isn't the case. Obviously, I'd figured out the system enough that I was able to pay for a house. Apparently, while earning the below poverty line wages that they send me, I'd suddenly and unexpectedly managed to secure ownership of a house. So, no longer needed to pay rent. Obviously, that was the case, and that was clearly always what was going to happen. I'm glad somebody believes in me. I mean, it kind of feels like they hate me for the most part. After all, they do treat all Centrelink recipients as being in the same category, that category being dull, bludging sponge. NDIS recipients have a plethora of different needs. A lot can happen to the human body. It's easy to get caught up on the idea of sex workers, and that seems sensationalized and outrageous. But everyone is skipping over what I would consider the more concerning stuff. Psychic healing, tarot cards, sound baths, and crystal wand making are being offered to NDIS participants, as though they are children in a daycare run by a woman in Birkenstocks from Byron Bay, who locals would describe as a bit of a personality. At least the benefits of sex have some backing in science, not like any of this garbage. Now, while what constitutes sex is an open-ended question that's highly individualized to the person, like the NDIS is supposed to be, and I'm not here to kink shame anyone, I think we'd find a real stretch to... And while I'm not here to kink shame anyone, I do think that we'd find it a real stretch to classify psychic healing, tarot cards, sound baths, and crystal wand making as some sort of sex. Unless fucking with the people who do the paperwork counts as a form of sex, in which case, go off kink. If I'm honest, I'm pretty sure that making disabled people jump through hoops that are specifically designed to work against their disability does indeed get NDIS operatives off, and while turnabout is fair play. We can call it a form of financial domination, this relationship that we have between NDIS workers and recipients. In the end, the debate around the financial sustainability of the NDIS inevitably hangs on the issue of sex work after Shorten has vowed to ban it from being funded by the scheme, citing the service as unnecessary when so much of the NDIS was actually designed to fuck its recipients every day. Shorten said he had zero interest in anyone's private life, despite acting like a bigger nosy neighbour than the entire subgenre of character in sitcoms from the 50s and 60s, saying this was not a decision about denying people what was reasonable and necessary, just denying services like pain-relieving medical marijuana and removing some people's only form of touch outside of practical support worker touch needs that occur from time to time. Items such as toys of a sexual nature were also to be banned after the realisation that Parliament was already spending way too much money on a bunch of dildos. Ironically, the NDIS still provides public funds for sex aid products like Viagra, because at this point, the NDIS has become more of a giant throbbing metaphor for trying to use a system that only provides you with half of what you need to sustain a regular existence. And we've come to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging around and listening to the whole thing. I do hope you enjoyed it. If so, feel free to tell a friend, share it around. If you haven't, join up to the Patreon. I'd really appreciate that if you could jump on board. Or if you want to support us, do come out to the live shows. Remember, I've got two live shows this Melbourne Fringe Festival. So that's in October. I really hope that I get to see you there. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.